This is the ARC Energy Ideas Podcast with Peter Terzakian and Jackie Forrest, exploring trends that influence the energy business.
Okay. Welcome, everyone, to our ARC Energy Ideas Podcast. I'm Jackie Forrest.
And I'm Peter Terzakian, and welcome. This is a very special podcast. Don't I say that every week? Every week is a special podcast.
But this one's really special.
It's a really special podcast. But let me tell you what happened. About 3 weeks ago, one of my favorite people, Katie Smith, who's the executive director of the Young Women Energy, dropped me a note and asked if we would be willing to do a live broadcast of our podcast from the Young Women in Energy Awards Banquet. Without hesitation, I said yes. And so here we are, recording live from that event. And I'll tell you, this is really exciting because it is all about leadership, achievement, diversity, and many things that we're going to talk about on this podcast.
Yeah, we're going to learn more about the awards celebration tonight, but they're going to give 10 awards that are handed out every year to women that are leaders in the energy field. And we'll talk a little bit more about why I see that as a really important thing. And I really congratulate everyone that's here for being part of this.
Yeah, it's super important. And just looking at the winner roster, I mean, it's amazing. We've got certainly young women in energy, certainly given that we are here in Calgary. There's representation from the upstream oil and gas industry, the midstream. We've got geoscience, data science, renewables, geothermal, regulatory and policy. And so 10 winners in all, they're just highly accomplished people. And I got to tell you, I had the privilege of being a judge. Katie asked me to be a judge a couple of years ago for the Young Women in Energy. And I said, yeah, sure. And she handed me the resumes of the, I think it's about six people that I had to go through. And I thought that was an arduous process. And, you know, that was not arduous because it was a lot of work. It was just because these people are so accomplished. These women are so accomplished. I think, like, what was I doing when I was young and in my 20s? I wasn't doing what all these people were doing. But so it is a very impressive group. We're going to talk more with Katie when she comes up here in about 10 or 15 minutes. We're going to set the stage here before. And really, it's this event is about leadership, and leadership is so important as we think about the challenges that we face going forward.
So our agenda before we talk to Katie a bit more about some of the questions that the winners have given us is we're going to set the stage for why this event is important. We're going to talk about pressing issues in energy today and the types of leadership that it will take to take on the challenges that we face, and of course then answer the questions that have been brought forward. So let's start about why this event is important.
Yeah, well, it's really important. Well, I mean, you started your career at the U of C and you've become a leader. So we want to talk about mentorship. It's really important to be a mentor. But there's a lot of stats about women in engineering. You're an engineering grad.
I am, yeah. I graduated from U of C in 1996, so I think my bio has to be updated because I don't think it's 20 years anymore, but just doing some quick math, getting close to 25. And when I graduated, these types of communities just didn't exist. There really wasn't anything like this. And I do believe if they had, we would have increased the chances of more of the women that I graduated with still being in the industry, because one of our problems is we don't get very many women into the energy industry, and they don't stay that long. And I think having groups like this, communities, recognition is really important and will change how things are.
So give us some stats, like what percentage of women are in energy?
Well, okay, so I have stats for women in engineering, but I did get some stats from Katie that aren't so different. So I think it is probably pretty indicative of the situation. So today, about 20% of Canadian students in engineering are women in undergraduate. And U of C here, where I graduated, Strulick School of Engineering, is above average. About 25% of the enrollment is women. But it is moving in the wrong direction. It's down from 2012 when it was 27.5%. Why is U of C above average? They believe, and I've been involved in this working with them as well, is it because they take proactive steps to educate young girls in high school about what a job in engineering can be. And so I have participated in that. You know, I think generally what you find is women that are in engineering, you ask them why they chose it, it's because they have a family friend or a father who was in engineering and they chose that path because they had some exposure to what it was. Without that, they really don't think of engineering as an option, right? So having these presentations to high school girls has materially impacted the numbers. But there's a problem. First of all, we lose some in undergraduate. So generally, the amount that graduate are 2 or 3% less than the ones that enter. So we're losing them there. And then when they come into their careers, we're losing more. And so actually one of the proactive programs that Strulick is starting to do is mentoring programs for women that are in the industry to mentor young women to help keep them in the industry. And that's why I think groups like this are really important, because they create that network that that provides a lot of that same mentorship.
Well, we know equality and diversity is so important. We're going to talk more about that when Katie comes up and we get into some of the questions from the group. But it is important because the energy industry at large really needs more female representation, not just because of the number count. It's just a different way of thinking. It's just so important right now. And, you know, there's that famous quote by Desmond Tutu, "How would it be if an orchestra were all French horns?" You know, you basically get into, in other ways, like an echo chamber kind of thing where everybody is just doing the same tune. So it's super important. But, I mean, the numbers back it up, too.
Well, that's true, right?
We had the podcast with Pat Bryden. I don't know,
it was back in June.
Scotia, and he showed the stats, which basically said that diverse companies work a lot better and the numbers back it up. So again, highlighting the importance of all this. And there's many, many consultant reports that diversity matters. Top quartile companies with diversity were 35% more likely to have higher profitability. So this isn't just talk, this is about expanding perspective. It's about thinking differently. And boy, with all the issues that we face in the world today, in the industry today, I think we can agree we need thinking out of the box and different perspective and get away from an all French horn orchestra.
Well, and investors are recognizing this too. So there are initiatives like the 30% Club, where that's at the board level, but I think they're recognizing it in the management teams as well, where there are initiatives to tell companies that by 2030, you need to have 30% of your board be female representation, because investors are seeing these stats too. I don't think it's unreasonable.
So you're highlighting a double trend. One is that the percentage of females in the energy business is low, but they're also exiting. Why is that?
The view is that we need more mentorship and network creating. Like, I think about my career when I joined for my many first few jobs, I was like the only woman in my work group. I was really the only person like me. You know, one of the main reasons people are engaged in their jobs is they have a friend at work. And I would say for the first 10 years of my career, there wasn't really too many people I would have enough in common with to actually consider them a friend. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's really important, that if you can't get that at work, that if you can create a network of people that are in the same industry facing the same problems, that can really help your engagement at work. So I think that is really important. And I think that has been lacking. And so, you know, groups like this are really important. I also think we need more recognition for women because there is, we'll get into that unconscious bias issue, but there is an issue with unconscious bias. And so just recognizing the women that are doing really well. And that's why I think this award is great. Not only does it give you recognition amongst this community, but, you know, if you win this award, probably your company's going to put an email out. I know Peter did for me when I won an award from Schulich School of Engineering. He put a company-wide email out, you know, recognizing me for that award. So I got a lot of recognition within the company as well. And I think that's important because those senior leaders might say, oh, well, you know, here's this person that maybe we can mentor into a more senior role. Like, you have more visibility. So I think, you know, both this group and the initiative of the Leadership Award are both really important.
I think there's other studies, and I'm just sort of saying this ad hoc, but acknowledgement of achievement is one of the highest forms of reward. I mean, it's not all about getting a raise in money. It's just accomplishment and recognition of what you've done is super, super important. And that's why this evening is really important, because it just acknowledges the hard work of 10 incredibly talented people who are going to be the leaders of the future, as are many of the people in this room. It is about leadership, because we have got some pretty heady problems in this world, in this country, and also in the province, in the city. And we got to deal with those. So I was reflecting, which is a long process given my age. But I'm not Y or W. I'm O and M.
He's a boomer,
kind of figure
just
that one
for the
out.
Record.
Okay. So, all right. So, but, you know, I was reflecting and thinking, okay, what was I like when I was in my 20s and 30s? Certainly, if the Cold War wasn't enough to think about, the things that was hammering in the headlines, frankly, created a lot of anxiety for me as a teenager and in my early 20s, as I sort of went down the list of things, the National Energy Program, which was a Canadian and certainly an Alberta thing. Still recovering from the oil price shocks. I started out in the oil and gas business in 1982 on the eve of that national price energy program. And then the price of oil promptly continued to crater into 1985-86. I mean, it was a really grim time. Not only that, we had environmental disasters. I mean, climate change is the preeminent environmental issue today, but I can tell you that growing up in the 70s and 80s was not a pleasant time. As somebody who was young, we had Three Mile Island, and that was a nuclear disaster in the east coast of the United States, toxic waste dumps like Love Canal, acid rain, dying of the Great Lakes, leaded gasoline and smog, ozone layer depletion, and a whole host of other issues. It was a pretty big basket of things that certainly as a young person, I just felt like, whoa, like this is really unsustainable. This is really anxiety creating. And so I kind of get the same vibe today, and we sort of have this recency bias that, oh, you know, these issues that we're dealing with today are new and unique. They're not. And nor is the fact that it takes courage and leadership to lead us through these issues mm-hmm. and make improvements to the world to make it a better place. And that's why today is important, this evening is important, is to basically talk about the leadership qualities that are necessary to help us solve some of these big picture issues that are facing the world, the country, the province, the city.
Well, and to get context, most of those issues were solved, right? Those ones you talked mm-hmm. about, right? Like ozone layer depletion, leaded gasoline, a lot of those things were solved. So I have a lot of hope that we'll solve the issues of today, and there are many. We've got, obviously, the oil and gas industry in a major transition, not only because of the disruption from climate change, but also from within, because we've developed new technology that makes our business a lot different in terms of how you can make a buck at it. We've got the potential for substitution, big change in the financial services industry, not only what investors expect out of oil and gas companies, but even just how stocks are traded and how liquid they are and how much interest they have. We have geopolitics, breakdown of trade agreements, fear of a recession. Like, have I depressed you yet?
Yeah, well, no, I'm a veteran. What am I? I'm a boomer? Right. Am I a boomer? Is that what
You're
I am?
You're a boomer, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so, you know, these are big, big challenges, and we're going to need a lot of leadership in our industry to navigate them all.
We are. And so welcome, Katie Smith.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Fantastic. So tell us about the Young Women in Energy and the Leadership Awards.
Absolutely. So Young Women in Energy is a nonprofit, Alberta-based. We have over 4,500 members. We represent all disciplines within the energy sector. So everything from marketing and human resources to engineering and geosciences, and then the entire value chain. So anybody who works in or for the industry. So you can be in services, you can be in consulting, law, and then any type or energy source as well. So any type of renewables, any type of fossil fuels, doesn't really matter. So our focus is on what we call the missing middle. So ideally that's when you graduate from whatever post-secondary education that you choose, you typically get a lot of support from your alma mater, you might have some new grad programs at your company, and then when you're already an executive, you really get already handed a lot of executive coaching, some mentorship at that level. But you have almost this 20-year gap where you're kind of on your own. It's up to you to own your own career, but then for women, layer on the possibility of childbearing years if you choose to have a family, or ups and downs of a personal life, or aging parents, and all of that on top of everything. And so what we find is that own your own career goes so far, but you really do need that peer support network to figure out, like you said, same industry, same challenges. Okay, how are you dealing with it? How can I deal with it? So it's kind of learning from your peers. So what YWD does as a whole is that connection to other people so that you're not the only one in the room. And then obviously professional development. We have some professional development, both industry and business acumen at a lower cost, so women don't have to ask their companies to pay for a lot of things. But really the awards is our flagship program. So we've been running it since 2014. It was the first thing that we did out of the gate. Since then, we recognize 10 women a year. Again, all disciplines. There's been a really interesting, even a change of who we considered important at the time. Like I would say it probably swayed a little bit more on the engineering and technical side back on the first year. And then it's almost gone to more the strategy and HR.
Yeah,
and
I noticed
talent.
That. I mean, you've got the posters of all the winners in the mm-hmm. room here. For those who are listening, sort of give you a visual. We're in a big sort of a banquet hall and a couple hundred 200-300 people, and there's all these awesome posters of the winners. And the discipline is not all science, technology, nope. engineering, math, what is that, the STEM?
Yeah, so it's STEM and non-STEM.
Yeah.
ideally just you need all the voices in the room to sing the song is kind of the point. We ask them to be either self-nominate or get nominated. And a couple years ago, we realized that women don't actually nominate themselves very often. So we had to create something called, we call it hashtag nominate her.
So is, that, is the converse true? Men always nominate themselves?
I don't know. I don't know about that. Okay. But we did find way more success once we got someone who was either nominated once or nominated twice or nominated by someone that they didn't expect. It was often a lot of times people pushing the person to apply, because you do actually have to apply. You have to submit all the information. Someone can't submit that on your behalf. But it's that little extra cheerleader push behind that was really important. So that's kind of what we've done. So then going through the process, like you've participated in the executive selection committee who get to evaluate, and they're evaluated by their peers, and then this whole scorecard situation happens. So ideally, really, the top 10 come to the top, and we're so excited to recognize those people. And then from here on out, what they get is they get rewarded at this event with a physical award. We have some glass awards behind us. And we'll pair them with an industry mentor, which I think you mentored a previous award winner for the year. And then we really just try to raise their profile in a number of ways, give them other speaking opportunities, opportunities to host roundtables, really anything that kind of we work with them to see what's within their discipline or interests. So
super important.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite times of year.
Well, thanks for having us. So now we're going to get into the questions. So what did you, we asked you to go and pull the 10 winners for questions. And we pared that down to five or six.
Yeah, I think four. So we got some really great questions that you're more than welcome to use for future podcasts if you would like. but we did have to pare it down. So maybe we'll start off with the first one. One of them asked, what are some of the conventional thinking in the energy industry that needs to change?
Yeah, well, that's well, there's a lot of conventional thinking. But by the way, as I say this, I'm going to tell you that the comments that I'm going to give you are not necessarily exclusive to the energy industry, because there's this perception that the energy industry is very unwilling to change, and you know, especially the oil and gas industry. But I'll tell you, like, I mean, there's a lot of industries out there that are established, that are undergoing disruption, and we're all human. I mean, we are all resistant to change. And one of the things that I want to talk about at a very high level, and then I'll, Jackie, you can go more into the details, is that one of the things that needs to change is the belief, I think, that technology can solve everything, right? This is quite pervasive out there. If we just implement this fancy new gadget, it'll reduce our emissions, or if we just substitute an old power plant with renewables, it's just that easy, right? And it's not. And science and technology only takes us so far. And I argue, and I've argued this for a long time, that technology is way ahead of society's ability to adopt these things. And so actually the issues are social. And I'm so delighted, you know, as I walked by the posters to see that it's not all science and technology related award winners, that what we really need are the other side of the brain. I don't know which side of the brain is technical and which side is more creative, but creative communication people, people in the social sciences, you know, the bridging sciences like economics. I've even heard of an oil and gas company that's recently hired an anthropologist because it's about human evolution and it's organizational evolution. And as we talked about the French horn thing, right? Well, it's no good if we have nothing but tubas and trombones and French horns and trumpets, right? You got to have the violins and the piano and everything else to make it work. And so I just want to say this is one of the biggest issues is organizations need to understand that it's very much the impediments to progress are social, not technological.
Well, I totally agree. But if you look at most energy companies, there's not a ton of diversity. So
no.
I think the conventional wisdom that you hire certain types of people into the organization really needs to change. That's one conventional wisdom. That's a big one.
Yeah.
One of the ones I like to talk about is that the liberal government or federal government is the source of all of our problems. And I think we all recognize that isn't the case. I think this group's fairly well informed. But you know, we have a lot of changes that have happened in this industry, whether it be the change in, as I mentioned before, in the technology, which has drastically brought down the production costs for oil and gas, or if it's the changes in investor preference. You know, investors now don't want you to grow. They want you to give them money back. So no more reinvesting everything you make and more, but actually don't invest everything that you make. Give some money back to them. Yeah. And unless you do that, they're not going to value your company. There's also lots of changes around demand, right? And concerns around demand, especially longer term. I don't think that's affecting the industry as much as those other factors today, but that's definitely in the back of how people think as well. So there's lots of a layering of issues that the industry is facing.
Yeah, these are big issues that, you know, we've also got these biases, right, that are impediments to change. Like the lack of context, big picture context, especially even historical context, which certainly I'm big on. So this is recency bias. I already illustrated that a little bit by saying, you know, we all tend to think that the problems of today are all new. They're not. Right. We've been trying to deal with many of these issues for many, many decades, if not centuries. And so getting caught in certain biases. And the other bias that I find is something that the leaders of today and tomorrow need to avoid is the confirmation bias. In other words, selectively parsing information coming at you to confirm your pre-existing beliefs. But it's super important to broaden your context and to be able to acknowledge all sorts of different things from the wider data set of information coming at you, whether it's numerical or otherwise, and to be flexible in altering your belief. We're in a highly polarized situation. Mm-hmm. And so getting away from that, right?
Yeah, well, that comes down to even diversity in the people around you, because that can help you from getting that confirmation bias from everyone that thinks a lot like you.
Right. The need for that diversity is to get away from the confirmation bias. In other words, have people on a board at a strategic planning session or the broader organization that just challenge the status quo because they come from a completely different perspective.
Yeah.
Right? That's just, you just can't have the echo chamber effect, which leads to the confirmation biases. Okay, what other questions do we have?
So the second one is, talent and people are a critical differentiator in the energy industry. So what does the energy workforce or organization look like into the 2020s?
Well, you're going to take that one, Jackie?
Yeah, that's the easy one, right? Well, you know, I think there will be jobs. I can tell you that.
Thank goodness.
For all those that are worried about it. I don't think we're going to automate everything. And I still think Canada is going to be a major producer of oil and gas through the next decade and beyond. But, you know, by necessity, I think companies have to get more efficient. You know, I talked about that earlier, right? Investors want companies to not invest all their cash flow, but to actually give them money back. Without access to other capital, a key part of doing that will be to drive down your operating costs and create larger profit margin out of your business. And so we have to do that. And as an industry, it probably will mean less jobs per BOE of production. And it also probably means different types of jobs than maybe what we have today.
Yeah, I think we have to start with what would the organization of tomorrow look like? Because we know that the oil and gas company of the 2020s is not the oil and gas company of 2012. Right. We're going through this incredible transition, much as many other industries are going through, whether it's the retail business, taxi cabs, entertainment, newspapers, the list goes on and on. So those organizations and those industries have all changed, and they've adopted different types of skill sets and people. We, too, in the oil and gas business are in the midst of changing now. So the question to the leaders of tomorrow is, if you had a white sheet of paper to design the organization of tomorrow, knowing all the issues that the industry is facing, whether it's environmental, social, political, how would you design that organization? Then you start populating it with the talent and the people. And I'll just say that the parameters of growth, which Jackie already touched on, have changed. Growth in production has shifted to more level production because we're anticipating peak oil demand at some point. And the emphasis is not on growth at all costs, but at profitability of every barrel that is produced. And by the way, that barrel that's produced has got to be a progressively lower and lower carbon barrel. So what does the organization look like to deliver a better product at lower cost? Right. And then we can fill in the people based on that. Yeah.
Absolutely. So the third question is, there are a smaller percentage of women represented in senior roles, specifically in the energy industry. So what actions can be taken to change that statistic?
this has to start at the very beginning, right? Like, we've got to get more women in the industry and stay in the industry, because that's one of the problems, right? I think the unconscious bias, which I'll talk about a little bit more, but people have it and they don't even recognize they have it. I have it at stereotypes. So you see a resume and you immediately think they're unqualified because you have some bias and you don't even maybe even appreciate that. So, people might have 200 resumes and go through it all and shortlist like 5 men for the position and say that the other people weren't qualified. They didn't find any women in that stack that were qualified. And I think because of the unconscious bias that exists, and some organizations are doing this, a good idea is to actually say you have to have one woman candidate and take it all the way to the end. If they are totally not the best candidate, then don't hire them. But that way it forces people to put some women in the job, in the list of people that you're looking at, and bring them to the end and give them that chance.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like there's a lot of biases, right? The recency bias, confirmation bias, what did you call it? Unconscious bias?
Unconscious bias.
So, yeah.
Like a stereotype
bias. For future leaders, get rid of your biases, right? And if you're having difficulty getting rid of your biases, I guess there has to be, like you say, measures taken to force you to get rid of those biases, which would be the quota system, right?
Yeah, and then within that, I think there is some value in quota systems. And some oil companies are doing that, like Chevron. They have been working hard to have a culture that women can succeed. They are actively identifying women and trying to promote them into the leadership roles and mentoring them and saying that, you know, we have to do that because we have a tendency to want to work with people that are just like us. I mean, we tend to do that as humans and we may not even realize that we're doing that.
So why are you working with me? Like,
This shows you the value of diversity, I guess. But yeah, so that you force by quotas people to force people into those roles. And I know that can be controversial. I'm not sure everyone would agree that that's the right thing to do. But the way I look at it, like even board quotas, is if you give that woman a chance, she will prove, I think most likely, that she can do the job and she'll be great at it. And she may not have all the experience that most men would have or other candidates, but you got to give them the chance to get that experience too, right? So I think by having the quotas, it forces, you know, those positions to open up. And I think a lot of great women are going to prove and gain the respect of their colleagues in those roles once they see how they perform in those roles, but they need that chance.
But think about it. I mean, the immediate reaction is that this sort of imposition or policy is going to come from the government, right? But it's actually not coming from government at all. It's the investors are actually starting to demand it.
You know, yeah, like they're writing
ESG,
letters.
Right? It's under the S of ESG, right? They are writing letters. And so actually, we're in an interesting era, I mean, not only with this diversity issue, but with environmental, well, all of the ESG, where the most impactful policies, I'll put policies in quotation, are not necessarily coming from government at all. It's actually coming from the providers of the capital. A long time when I started out, when I was a YME, as I first started out my career, I had a crotchety old boss, but I was a bit of a person always challenging the status quo. And anyway, cut a long story short, I sort of questioned the status quo and I said, well, why are we doing it this way? And he sort of pulled me aside and he said, well, now listen, he said, do you know the golden rule? And I, being young and, I don't know, 21, I said, nope, I don't know the golden rule. I said, well, those who have the gold make the rules. Right? And this is the situation. I mean, that simple golden rule is something that, you know, I've carried through my financial career and everything that I do is you can't forget that the people with the capital and the gold are ultimately the one that makes rules. I mean, we live in a free market capitalist economy, and that's the way it works. And in this case, I think it works to the advantage of diversity because the people with the gold are basically imposing these sorts of policies, whether it's environmental, social, or governance, onto the behavior of the corporate world.
Yeah, and it's working. You know, CERAWeek is this conference that I go to every year. It's one of the bigger energy conferences globally. And last year, a number of the CEOs brought up what they were doing on diversity for the first time I'd ever heard that. So that is coming from the top. You know.
Yeah, these are all big issues, environment, social issues, governance, transparency. And it's kind of a painful transition in many ways because, as I said much earlier, change is always unsettling, whatever the issue is. But I think when we come out of this, Canada in particular, because we are under so much ESG scrutiny, not only from government, but also now increasingly from the financial sector, that we are actually pioneering and blazing a trail through through all these issues that others have yet to wake up to. And I think it's going to serve us very well going forward. So, Katie, what's number four?
So this is a bit off the cuff, but I do need to give kudos to both of you because I do know a couple years ago at the ARC Investment Forum, you did have an internal kind of mandate to really increase the number of female speakers. So I think it is tone from the top. And so I do want to really take the time to say thank you for that because I think that's really important. So yeah, the final question is, what advice do you have for young professionals or emerging leaders who are hoping to leverage their skills into other energy sources or sectors?
Well, I think that there's opportunity in every energy space. The overwhelming directive right now in the energy business is to reduce emissions, whether that's substituting with renewables and increasingly within the fossil fuels. That is the end point, is to reduce emissions. So I think that my advice actually sort of is a little bit on the periphery of this question, is that we have to get more collaboration between the entrenched businesses and the new age, the new world businesses, if we are going to solve some of the biggest world issues of today that Jackie highlighted earlier. It's really, really important because we tend to take these problems and make them binary, right? It's either A, no oil and gas and all renewables, or it's then the other side would say, no, oil and gas is going to last forever. There's not going to be a lot of renewables. It's not black and white. Right? It never is. And the more that the leaders in this room and of tomorrow collaborate and work together on technical and social issues, I think the much better off we'll be.
So are you saying that you don't have to move out of the oil and gas industry into alternatives? You're saying they're going to merge into one?
Well, I think all the energy systems are going to become less siloed and become more hybridized. We're going to see potentially even, you know, small nuclear reactors with oil production drive towards Medicine Hat, and you'll see solar panels. And if you just go off the highway a bit, you'll see solar panels on oil wells. The goal is to reduce emissions. Mm-hmm. The goal is to make things more sustainable. It's not black and white. We have to think of clever ways of transitioning to the future. One other thing that I would encourage is a lot of the discussion that seems to be had is about 2040 and 50. Like, I don't know, when I was young, I wasn't thinking about 2020 or 2010. Like, I was thinking about the next year or two. And we tend to lose the immediate perspective. The immediate imperative is to solve these pressing issues of reducing emissions as quickly as possible. We need to put all our brain power collectively together to do that today, like 2040, 2050. Who knows what's going to happen? I mean, I couldn't have told you in 2020 what was going to happen in 1990. Mm-hmm. Could you? No, you were what? What are you, Gen X?
That's right, 1990. Yeah, I wasn't thinking about energy transition.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and I would have answered this one a little differently. I mean, I was thinking more about, like, all of us have to be thinking about our careers as constantly evolving and changing. You know, it's gone are the days where you just entered the oil industry and just stayed in the same job, you know, for 25 years and retired with a big pension. The pensions are gone too, generally, right? So, but I think you've got to think about retraining, taking opportunities, expanding your skill set, doing lateral moves so that you can get more diverse experience.
Yeah.
If there's opportunities into different areas of the organization or different types of energy, just to be really open to that, because I do believe that you will probably need to have two or three major career changes in what you do, you know, in the course of your career, and maybe even more, because that's kind of how many I've done. So probably for you, it might even be more than that, right? So
yeah, like I'm a boomer.
Yeah. Well, Peter, yeah, so he's unusual. Most boomers, you know, got the office job at Chevron and stayed there.
No, it's an important point. I'm on my, I think I'm on the verge of my fourth major pivot in my personal life. I mean, I started out as a technical geek doing computer science and physics in an oil company in 1981, right? And here I am. So I was really a technical geek, and I migrated more to economics and started to get into the softer issues. And then now, I mean, it's 90% of my job is communication and writing.
And writing. And did you take time off to go back to school during that time, right?
Twice.
And I think that's going to be in a lot of people's careers, especially people your age, that there'll be times when you go back to school. I went back to school for 2 years, but I worked at the same time to get my master's in business. And there's a lot of opportunities popping up now where either there's an opportunity that people do need new skills and more opportunities, I think even broader for ongoing training during your career, like Schulich School of Engineering, which I'm involved in. They're offering a one-year program for engineers that want to become software programmers. And they get a master's in software that has started a couple of years ago, oversubscribed. You know, it takes these people that weren't working, and as soon as they come out of that program, they all get jobs, right? And so I think that is going to be more necessary over the next 10 to 15 years, more of these types of ways to retrain during your career.
But I mean, let me ask you the question. So you started off in a Japanese refinery, right?
That was my first job. Yeah.
Refinery in Japan. Did you think you were going to be on stage doing a podcast whenever that was? Like, no. You sort of evolve your career path and constantly are innovating on your personal things because the world is changing around you. And I think this is really important, is you have to recognize when it is time to pivot. So if you told me I was going to be writing books when I was 21, I almost failed my first year English university course, so you gotta be crazy. But here I am. So,
yeah, you can teach an old dog new tricks.
Yeah, absolutely. An old boomer new tricks. Okay, so where are we at? I think that sort of wraps it up. So Katie Smith, thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much. To have this, the opportunity to highlight this topic on your podcast is really, really appreciated. So thank you.
Well,
thank
congratulations to the leaders of tomorrow. Thank you for having us in this room.
Yeah, and this is our last episode before the holiday break. So enjoy your time off for those that are getting time off. And we look forward to being back in the new year. If you like this podcast, please rate us on the app that you use and tell someone else about us.
For more ideas and insights, visit arcenergyinstitute.com.